to the Moonshine Jesus Show, brought to you as always by ProgressiveChristianity.org, a great place to get all of your progressive Christian resources. Hope you will check them out and you will follow us on social media and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Today we're talking about Madam Web, and I am joined as always by Mark Sandlin. How are you, Mark?
I am doing well today. I hope you are, sir.
I'm doing pretty well with what we've got to talk about, Madam Web. It'll be an interesting conversation, I'm
Indeed
sure.
Indeed, it will.
I think today in particular, Mark, it's going to be maybe real more important than for us to have an adult beverage to get into this. Yeah. So do you have one?
I do. I just decided to go with the spider theme since it was so overdone in this movie. I figured I would just go with something that's a straight-up spider-themed drink. So I'm having what's called a Dublin Spider, and it is pretty straightforward. Yeah. It's Irish whiskey, ginger ale, and bitters, and I like bitters, so I went heavy bitters. So it's called a Dublin Spider. It's kind of yellowish with a tiny red tint to it. I don't know if that's supposed to be the color of venom or something. All I know is it's got whiskey in it, and I'm going to need some whiskey.
What did you decide to go with? Need some whiskey. That sounds good. So I also was inspired by spiders, but more the spider web. There's a lot overdone spider web. A lot of glass breaking in the shape of spider webs.
Absolutely.
So I wanted something that looked spider web-y. And so I've got something that... that looks kind of spider webbish, and it's got milk in it. It's also got coffee liqueur, and it's got Kahlua in it, and whipped cream, ice, and it's got some nutmeg on the top.
Is there a particular name for that? It sounds delicious.
So I called it a spider web.
I like it,
but. Yeah, because it looks webby. It was some kind of a Halloween drink that I have adapted for Madam Web.
Perfect. It looks delicious. Cheers, and sounds delicious. Cheers. Moonshine Jesus. Moonshine Jesus. Moonshine Jesus. Moonshine Jesus. Won't you shine? Welcome to the Geek Out segment of the Moonshine Jesus Show. As Caleb's already told you, we're talking about Madam Web today. The official synopsis is sort of bland, but I'm going to share that with you. It says that Cassandra Web is a New York City paramedic who starts to show signs of clairvoyance. Forced to confront revelations about her past, she must protect three young women from a mysterious adversary who wants them dead. And you know, the description in some ways is fitting for the experience of the movie. But I wanted to give an honest synopsis. So this is what I came up with. Tell me if this is reasonably close. I came up with, because of a reoccurring dream, a second-rate bad guy decides to kill three teen girls. And with the help of an almost random woman, they run and run and run away from the guy. And then they ultimately kill him with the help of overdone product placement. Is that fair?
I love that. I feel like that would have really helped me go into the movie with a real understanding of what I didn't have high hopes for the movie because I read the reviews ahead of time. Okay. And I'm like, this movie is going to be bad. But I thought maybe it's going to fall into the category of so bad, it's good. It did not. It didn't for me.
You know what? Let's take a 180 pivot here. Okay. What did you like about the movie?
You know, I liked that there was some diversity in the movie. And that's one of the things that made me really want to like the movie for it. We had female leads, and we had four-ish kind of female leads. And although whether or not they actually connected and had a decent part was as another story. But I like that we had, you know, we had a Latinx teen, mm-hmm. we had a black teen, and then we had two white women, but we had mm-hmm. women. I liked that. I liked the thought of playing with clairvoyance and right. what that might look like, how that might anticipate execution was something different, but I liked those elements of it. Did you have things that you liked, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really liked the costumed version of the teen trio. I found them to be far more engaging than the sort of almost caricatures that they play. I mean, they uh-huh. almost felt like they were cosplaying stereotypes the whole movie. Uh-huh. But the costume version of them kind of caught my imagination, but we get less than a minute of the costume version of them. So that didn't really work out for me, unfortunately. I thought that at times it was actually really funny and entertainment. There were moments that were. Admittedly, there were times where it was entertaining for all the wrong reasons.
And that's why I was going to ask, were they supposed to be funny movies?
They were. Yeah, here's the thing. When we did the very beginning flashback to the Amazon, I figured out pretty quickly, oh my gosh, this isn't great. And I just decided, it was Valentine's Day when I watched it. I was there with my wife, and I just decided from the very beginning, well, I said suspension of disbelief. I'm going deep in. I'm just going to completely. And I'll be honest. I walked out having had fun. And my wife did. We both enjoyed it enough. We laughed a lot. It was okay. Now, I went back and started thinking about the movie and realized, maybe not. But at times we did. We found it funny. We found it entertaining. I really liked them switching the with great power comes great responsibility. Having them say, when you take responsibility, great power will come. I loved getting to see Uncle Ben alive again. You know, that was kind of nuts. But basically what you're hearing is I'm really stretching to say
it could be a fun experience if you let yourself have a fun experience.
You just check out and just go, hey, I'm not long for the ride. Honestly, I found it a lot of fun. There was a lot of action, and you know, but when you start analyzing it, you start realizing there's some negatives. So, what didn't you like about the movie? And keep in mind, we've only got about 10
minutes. Well, let me also say that I actually had fun too, but I think mainly because everybody in the theater realized what they were watching. And so there were moments when it was so bad that people started laughing at the show. Like whenever she goes in underwater, the car crashes underwater and she discovers her powers. Yeah. Like that's supposed to be kind of a cool moment, the self-discovery moment. And the theater was laughing. Like everyone in the theater was laughing because of how bad it was. Right. And I thought this is the thing that's great about the social experience of movies is that we got to experience this terrible movie together. So I think dialogue was one of the things that was really bad. And
so bad.
And that was something that there was a lot of laughing about in the theater. That's one of the things at the top of my list is just especially the big bad, his dialogue.
Oh gosh,
that was almost nothing and narrating and his decision to play his character with some kind of a voice kind of like this. I don't know what it was, but no amount of speaking in a gravelly voice made what he was saying scary or ominous or anything in any way other than extremely, extremely corny, Mark. How about you? What's at the top of your bad list?
There's so many. I think the top was related to that. It's what in Hollywood they call the additional dialogue recording. That's where they go in and they after they film the movie, so they do voiceovers essentially. And there was so much of it. So much of it.
I mean, you could visibly, and from the back, see their faces, their mouths not moving
with the moving with the words. And sometimes there were direct shots of them where they were clearly dubbing in something they didn't say. I mean, there was a, and then there were moments where, particularly with Dakota Johnson, when she goes back to Peru, where there's shots from behind where the voice level dramatically changes. When we're like, when she's talking, it's like, wait a minute, why is that so severely different? So there was that, there was so much bad CGI, bad lighting, particularly in the early shot when they're in the Amazon, lots of bad lighting. It felt like to me, the movie never really found its like footing, like in terms of theme and tone. I'm not sure that it ever figured out. What it was going to be, how it was going to be, what, you know, what kind of movie was it? I do sort of feel like a lot of that, particularly when you consider how much of the additional dialogue, the ADR, the additional dialogue recording that happened, I feel like something must have happened after everything was done and someone with power, Sony, someone came in and said, that's not the movie you're going to make. And they redid it. And because of it, it got switched up enough that it really lost its footing. It's who are we? And like you said, there was so much bad writing, right?
Terrible writing, terrible dialogue. And to your point, Mark, it really felt like we were watching a rough cut, like a screener even, that just hadn't been finished. Because the other thing that really hit me, especially in the first half of the movie, is that it was underscored. Like there were whole sections of dialogue with no music. It was a really weird kind of experience. I don't think I've ever left a movie feeling quite like I'm not sure I saw the final cut of that movie. Did they think they were done with this? I'm not sure they were really done with this.
And I think it ruined a lot of, it messed up a lot of things that, you know, when I was kind of intentionally being suspicion of disbelief, I allowed myself not to pay attention to, but going back and thinking about it, there's so much stuff that makes absolutely no sense. For instance, the main character, Cassandra, and the girls realize that they have to stay out of public because somehow people are figuring out where they are. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, Cassie decides she needs to go to Peru. And this is set just after 9/11. Do you know how many checkpoints and cameras that she would have to go through to get to Peru? So you know how they solve it, right? They just don't show her traveling to Peru.
She says, I'm going
to Peru. And the next moment she's in Peru. like there's so many things like that that happened over and over again that it was like, I want to say it's bad storytelling, but I also think that the movie just got so chopped up that it could have been just left on the floor. And the thing that I hated the most about this movie that I didn't like, is that she's clairvoyant, which is pretty interesting. You could do some cool things with it.
Yeah.
But it's almost like they wanted, this made me so upset, Cassie's real superpower in the movie to be learning to be a good mom for the trio of teenagers. You have this, a female lead to a superhero movie, and probably the thing that is most important is that she learns how to be a good mom to this like trio of teenagers. I mean, how insulting not the being a good mom isn't a superpower because it's definitely a superpower.
Yeah.
But that's what you make it? I mean, what'd you think of that?
That was in my notes too, because we set it up so that these girls don't have any kind of a home life.
Right.
And Cassie is searching for to be the mother that she never had, as if that is her sole purpose in life. And yes, much of it is about her trying to become this mother figure. And I think that Dakota Johnson also realized that as they were filming. I feel like maybe she was pitched a different movie. Maybe the one that is on the cutting room floor somewhere. I don't know. But, you know, she was interviewed after the movie came out. She was, and they asked her, how was it being around all the girls? And she said, there was some real bonding going on. And then there was me. Like that the girls bonded themselves. And like she was just like a different part of, like, it
seems
like.
She did, as soon as she finished filming, fire her agent.
Well, that was good. I also saw somebody saying, is there a reason that Dakota Johnson hasn't strangled her agent already after the kind of movies that she's been in? But which has left me wondering if she's if it's her own acting abilities or if it's just the movies that she's been in. I don't know.
I think it really comes down to the movies that she's been in. Director, she is a very specific type of actress. There are certain roles that she's exceptionally in. And then if you try to get her to expand her acting chops out beside of it, she doesn't really care to do that. She just, you know, she just delivers it kind of the same way. She's really exceptional when she's in the right role. This, I would argue, is not the right role. One of the other things about her, and I wonder if she wasn't forced to do this for some reason, and I don't know what the politics behind it would be, thinking about all the parts of the story that are there, you know, and Uncle Ben, and not naming Peter Parker. Like, there's that scene where, what do you think the name's going to be? They're almost teasing that it's going to be Peter, but would they ever say Peter? After the movie comes out, Dakota Johnson has been insisting during all of her press stuff that this is a standalone movie and that it's not part of any other Spider-Man universe.
Yeah.
Is there anything about this movie that made you think that it was standalone and wasn't supposed to connect with Uncle Ben or Peter's mother particularly? I mean, did it feel like it was not supposed to
be? I feel like that was her way of saying, I'm not doing another one of these. No, it was very connected. I mean, and we talked about the other films that it was connected to as well, the Venom, Venom and all that as well. So no, I mean, I think Sony was hoping that it would be a part of an interconnected universe. I don't think they're probably going to feel that way after the movie is done with the box office, but you never know.
Yeah. Who knows? Listen, we could go on and on about the things that we didn't think worked in this movie, but you know, let's move on to something that's actually more useful. Let's take a quick break, and on the other side, we'll enter into our theopolitical segment.
Welcome back to the Moonshine Jesus Show, where today we are talking about Madam Web, and we are entering our Theopolitico segment to talk about the theology and politics of Madam Web. So, Mark, she is a clairvoyant, and she can see the future. She's trying to kind of decipher what that means for her, which, because you and I are interested in theology, got me thinking about the eschaton, as it does for people, about seeing the future. Yeah. And here's something that I'm curious about your take on, Mark. So there is a hotly debated topic among scholars about whether or not.
And I wouldn't know about it. So.
I want to see where
your crew. I don't know those folks.
there's hotly debated topic about whether or not Jesus was, the historical Jesus, was an apocalypticist or not, about whether he spent most of his time talking about the end times or not. And so I'm thinking specifically about Bart Ehrman, very respected, scholar, one that progressive Christians look to a lot. He's one who says, yes, Jesus was an apocalypticist. Whereas the Jesus Seminar, also someone that a lot of progressive Christians look to, he was not an apocalypticist. That's not what he was talking about. I'm curious about where you land on it.
I believe I land more on the Jesus Seminar side. But I do think it was written in for him to be a little bit of apocalypticist. I think that probably if we could travel back in time and spend time with the historical Jesus, that the end of times was not something he was particularly fixated in. I do think he probably used it a little bit to get people thinking about the here and now, but that wasn't a feature or a focus of it. But I do think that some of the writings probably had folks coming back in and highlighting and emphasizing, although we don't have a lot of text about it. I suspect, based on most of his teachings that we can feel fairly certain were his actual teachings, that would not have been something that would have been a priority for him to talk about. And so when it is a priority in the text that we have, I feel like that's kind of an indication, and I think it's what Jesus Seminar sees as well, that someone came in and kind of overemphasized it, or, you know, in modern terms, kind of highlighted it when it wasn't supposed to be highlighted. That's where I fall on it, and I think his teachings are much more useful understood that way. What about you? Where do you fall on that?
Yeah, so I remember one time Bart was at my undergraduate institution when I was a religious studies major, and I asked him about this specifically, and he really doubled down on Jesus being an apocalypse. I don't think he was. I agree with you. I think that that he was talking about the coming of the reign of God, but it wasn't something that was going to happen at the end times. I think he was talking about us bringing it into fruition here and now. And so I fall on the side of, I don't actually think Jesus was an apocalypticist. I think that was the writers talking about end times wishing Jesus to come back, which...
But I think he did use it to talk about the kingdom of God as a present possibility. Frank Tupper, my theology professor, would talk about it as a present possibility. And I do think that's what it was being used and leveraged for, and then overemphasized in the wrong way by the writers and any editors that came along in the way they used it, for sure.
So the already not yet, that which is kind of coming to fruition here, but we have to work towards for that not yet part of the reign of God to come. But
it's the arc of the moral universe bends towards justice, but it doesn't bend gently. It takes the work of those of us who are willing to recognize the need for equality. It takes the work of those folks actually, you know, bending the arc to get there.
I like that, which makes me think about the big bad here in Madam Web, and about how he wants to kind of control his destiny and the destiny of others, and it drives him mad when he can't control it. And so there's a line of dialogue such as it is, and
you forgot to use the quote, the air quotes, when you said dialogue.
Line of dialogue in this movie, he's asked, "How come you're the one who gets to decide what happens to people?" And he said, "Because I'm the one with the powers. I'm the one with the powers, so I get to decide." Any relation in that statement, Mark, to anything that happens in the Bible or to our context today?
Well, I mean, at least within the context of today, there's unfortunately most of the world is ruled by people who have the power, who believe that because they have the power, that they get to choose the outcomes. And, you know, I suppose with the way that the masses, who are the majority, frequently don't respond, then they end up with that right. In a lot of ways, it doesn't speak highly of them. It says that it speaks to the kind of people they are. But I think it also speaks to what the majority of us should be doing. I mean, are we going to allow the people who have established themselves as having the power, even though they are a minority, are we going to allow them to make choices simply because of their position? Or are we finally at some point going to rise up and say that we are not okay with people being treated in a way that is not equal for all folks? So in a lot of ways, yeah, the people with the power do get to make the decisions, but that's mostly because we let them, you know? And that's not, at least my understanding of the teachings of Jesus, is not who we're supposed to be. If anything, Jesus was trying to rally us and make us realize that is not the way it has to be. Within terms of the movie, you know, Cassandra figures it out. She finally realizes the future isn't written in stone, that it can be changed. And that's what the masses, all of us, need to recognize, is that it isn't the case that those with power get to decide what happens. Mm-hmm. It's only the case if we allow it to be.
Yeah. So I did like that portion of the movie as well. The recognition that we could change our destiny. Right.
He doesn't think so. That's why he needs to kill these kids.
Right.
Like, I guess he is thinking he's going to kill it, but he approaches it in all the wrong ways.
Yes, he does. And for all the wrong reasons. But yeah. I think you're right that those with the power get to make decisions that impact a lot of people's lives. I think there are things we can do, but I think also the recognition, you know, globally, that, for instance, decisions that we make as a country impact people all over the world that they have very limited control over. And I think that's a theme that we see throughout the Gospels as well, especially 100%. When we see Jesus and the other Jewish peasants to whom he's speaking under the thumb of the Roman Empire, with little that they are ultimately able to do to influence Rome, other than try to create a different kind of world where Rome isn't in charge. Or where the empires of today aren't in charge. So 100%. I'm curious, Mark, back to the clairvoyance, because in theory, this Cassandra's superpower is not supposed to be super mom. It's supposed to be
maybe not in practice, but in theory.
Not in practice, about knowing our future. So I'm curious. Why do you think, Mark, we as people are so interested often in knowing what's coming? I mean, I think in some point that's what's behind like the eschaton or about thinking about those who are obsessed with like the rapture or things like that. Why do you think we as a society, and maybe we specifically as Christians, have been so obsessed with knowing what's coming?
I think it's a combination of two things for very different reasons. I think it's both fear and the need for hope. I think we're fearful of the unknown. And so the future is obviously one of the greatest unknowns. And so we'd love to be able to understand what it might be so we can be less fearful of it. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I feel like the present can sometimes feel overwhelming. Some of the best things about biblical texts are the way that it gives people who are in really hopeless situations, it talks about the future in a way that's hopeful. And so I think that's another element of it. So we've got a two-sided coin, one that's fear of the future and because it's so unknown, but also it is a blank slate that you can paint on and project a future that's different than what can feel hopeless right now. So I think it's both fear and hope that make us want to have some idea what the future might hold and what it might look like. What about you? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think that's one of the reasons throughout the biblical text we find a lot of writing about how God's with us in the midst of difficulty and about how things will be better in the future. And I think I think you're right too about you know these kind of apocalyptic texts that of which there are some in the Bible that they do envision a better future for those who are currently marginalized, a better life for those who are having to suffer now.
Yeah, that's the in Revelation. That's what it is. It is a letter to a people who are suffering under the reign of Rome that's written sort of in a code language about the future in order to provide some hopes in the midst of an oppressive regime, you know, stepping on their backs over and over again. Some of the best stuff that the Bible does do is to give hope for a future. Yeah.
You know, Mark, as soon as I realized that about Revelation and I like actually spent time with it, it went from being my least favorite book in the entire Bible to one of my favorites.
Right?
Yeah, I really love it because because one, it's fun. It gives you a vision of like a radical change in future, but it also like deals with real concrete problems. It's the language that gives hope to people and
it is a kind of surprising
way. Yeah.
Surprising the way it flips it, right? In terms of what you understand it's doing and how hopeful it is. And there's a lot of stuff in there that you can use to say, okay, how do we do that now? How do we give hope in the midst of downtrodden times and difficulties? And it's also sort of brilliant. There's a lot of going back and realizing, oh, that's what was going on there. That is so smart. That's so interesting. Yeah. I love what was, same thing for me. I used to be like, oh, God, man, there's so much crap that comes out of this, so much damage control that has to be done. And then you realize, oh, actually, this can be pretty brilliant.
It really can be. So, hey, Mark, we have managed to find some theo and political themes in this movie somehow or another. And
thanks to you. I have to say, going into this episode, I was like, oh my God, I am so glad that Caleb's the one that's going to pull some kind of theological, political positivity out of this. And you did an excellent job, sir.
Thank you, Mark. In the same way that you found some good in the movie generally. And so that's why we're a great team. And so to celebrate that teamship that we have, we're going to take a break and then come back and try and make each other look stupid because what do better teams do than that?
Welcome back to the Moonshine Jesus Show. You're joining us for our Make Me Look Stupid segment, the segment where we commence to try to make our co-hosts look stupid or just to admit that we ourselves are stupid and need their help answering a question. So I am going to jump right in here. There's this one piece that even as I was trying to just have like separation, you know, just disbelief, like I'll just buy into this. There's this one piece that I couldn't get past and my head kept going back to. And it's almost a two-parter, but it's really kind of the same question about the same people. So the spider people of Peru.
Yeah.
How is it that they spoke English and took this child that was born and somehow got them the child back into America and a birth certificate and help me understand. This is one of those, I am stupid. I do not understand. Help me understand.
Well, Mark, it's because this is the jungle equivalent of Spider-Man, that they are fighting for justice throughout and fighting the bad, the villains in the jungle. And so this is like their these are their costumes. This is their persona. But really, they're well educated. They are fluent in multiple languages.
Oh, okay.
And yes. And so they had the connections and the resources to get her out of that jungle. And through those resources, we're able to connect her with the foster system and to get her all the documents she needed. Because isn't that great? Because it makes no sense in the movie. There's nothing, right?
There's no reason why any of that should make any sense.
It makes no sense. Or how he somehow magically knows when she's coming back and that she'll need to come back. And I mean, I guess the sixth sense is supposed to be some kind of.
I mean, the fact that she's going to come back sort of made some sense to me because they were all bitten by spiders, the same spiders that gave her and our big bad in the movie some ability to see the future.
You can see,
but it was also funny that he needed to narrate that to her mom. Your child one day will come back here, and I will be here to tell. Like, why did you need to narrate? Okay, fine, whatever. Even as I was trying to suspend disbelief, that part, my head kept going. What?
Well,
what?
It's whatever 30 years later or whatever, and mm-hmm. and also like he's not dressed as a spider person anymore. He's just wearing like khakis. And so what did they have a uniform change or do they just dress like that on occasion and they happen to be whenever she got shot, the mom got shot I'm confused by the spider people of Peru.
That was confusing. Mark. Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. I don't have an answer either. That's why I needed to ask the question. It was one of those that's been like, oh, boy, I cannot wait till I get the opportunity to have Caleb explained this to me
luckily you did, because luckily I had the inside information.
Yeah, about, it was brilliant, about... man. So brilliant. And now it makes complete sense.
Okay, I've got a question for you, Mark.
Okay.
So whenever...
Oh, I think I've already proven I'm not going to be able to answer it, but go ahead.
Whenever Cassandra starts to see visions, she decides to go to a therapist. And so that's good, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
That's good. You know, if you're having issues, she's going
you
to...
You always should,
The advice of the therapist is that she should go home and she should watch old movies and all of it will pass in a week. Why was that her advice to go home and after a traumatic experience that what she should do is go home and watch some old movies? And so she goes home and watches Charles Dickens movies, Christmas Carol. She goes and watches Christmas Carol.
And you answered your own question. The reason that was her advice was because they needed a reason to show Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol, where a person struggles with the past and the future, just the main character. They worked really hard sometimes when they had an idea that the writing on this is horrible. Four people. Horrible. Like, it wasn't... One bad writer wasn't enough. They needed to get... They had a room full of four people, and not one did anybody seem to go, you know, that seems a little over the top. Oh, yeah, that seems a little simplistic. I don't understand how that connects logically. Four writers. And so I even think, this is no joke, I honestly believe that the date of the show, like 2008, whatever they put it in, was 100%. So it made sense to have Britney Spears Toxic playing a couple of times because of the toxin that he used. I really think that that's like, they were like, we got to use that song. I mean, come on, how perfect is that? So that means we need to be 2008.
You've convinced me.
I really think that's what happened.
And maybe the other grand plan that they were going to connect it to was going to be Peter Parker born and Uncle Ben and I don't think they explained that well enough either.
They did not.
I gotta tell you, Mark, I've got to make a confession.
Yeah.
Through most of this podcast, I was sitting here thinking, when was Uncle Ben in the show? And then it connected, like, oh, that's the Ben.
That's Ben. That was Ben.
Yeah. And I didn't make that connection at all. Ben Parker.
There's even a moment when he says something like, or someone says about him, I can't remember which way, he can't wait to be an uncle because it's all of the fun and none of the responsibility. And Cassie says, oh, he's going to find out about that. Or, oh, he's going to be surprised about that. Like, there's some insider kind of stuff going on.
I missed it.
I think that goes back to the editing. I think originally they snuck it in even, like, it was a little more clear. Yeah. And that Sony came back and go, oh, no, we can't connect it that clearly with Peter. We're not doing that. And so they had to, like, lop that out. And I think that's why it was so important that they did the bit of the game we're going to play at the shower of, hey, what do you think the name's going to be? Because she was Carrie Peter Parker.
Yeah, you've convinced me, but I didn't make the connection during the movie. I
can't blame you because,
like, why are we spending so much time at the? I thought it's because they want to show her relationship with her mom and how she's going to be like a mother figure for these other people. It was bad.
It was a train wreck. It really, really was. Well, listen. Unfortunately, we're sort of in the period of time of the year where sci-fi fantasy stuff kind of hits a lull. And I think this was just almost like they were trying to give us something, but they kind of just emphasized what a lull it is. But we do need to watch something to talk about next week. And I think I may have dug something up. Who knows if this is going to be any better. But right now, there's not a lot going on. But there is a movie that just dropped on Amazon called Monolith. Here's their description of it. While trying to salvage her career, a disgraced journalist begins investigating a strange alien conspiracy theory. But as the trail leads uncomfortably close to home, she's left to grapple with the lies at the heart of her own story. I've heard that the lead actress does an exceptional job. So this might be, it's at least worth a try. What do you think?
I think, Mark, that it's going to be hard to get much worse than the movie we just watched. The only one that I can think of that's been much worse than that we've talked about here was that, what was that one, Guardians or something?
The fantasy thing?
Yeah, it was something with the kids.
There was a kid. Oh, man, that was
That one was bad.
That one actually makes this one look okay.
It does. Like, I'm not. It looks great actually when you compare it to that. Right. That's where I'm leaving. I'm gonna leave. It wasn't that bad.
We'll go with Monolith and we'll keep our fingers crossed that it's at least a little bit of an upgrade. The good news is sometime in March we end up with a couple of good movies. So we'll be looking forward to what promises to be a good time then.
That's right. And you know what, Mark? Even if the movie is terrible, we're still going to have a good time. And we're still going to find all kinds of stuff to talk about.
Absolutely. And so we appreciate the folks that allow us to do that. Thank you all for joining in, whether you watch the live broadcast or listening back on the podcast. We are very appreciative of you. And so we will say our goodbyes until the next time on
Moonshine Jesus. Goodbye. And Jesus.